tell me about Swiftbrook, because you were involved in the setting up of Swiftbrook.
When I became sales manager, one of the areas that was very obvious to me that was a difficulty in the Irish market was our sales to paper merchants in Ireland, who had a huge control or share of the Irish market. And at the time, Clondalkin Paper Mills both manufactured paper but also sold paper as a paper merchant.
Yeah.
And it was the dealings were very, very clouded. The other paper merchants looked upon that with huge suspicion and felt that the mill was not being honest and straight in its dealings all the way around, and felt that we were trying to sell to them but also compete with them on the paper merchanting side. We agreed that the best way forward was to separate those two operations, concentrate in the mill on manufacturing paper and selling paper, and separate out the paper merchanting aspect of the business into a totally separate company. And we located it in Swiftbrook, so it was called Swiftbrook Paper. And staff from the sales department were transferred into that operation. We set it up, we got it going, and actually, a recognition of the success of that, that company's still running and running very successfully.
Is that because you captured a niche of the market? I mean, this was a special
no.
type of paper making.
No, no. The paper merchanting operation was supplying standard papers through a stockist who was selling on to smaller printers. The Swiftbrook Paper Mills was an old company.
Between the two.
That's right, yeah. That was a paper mill on that site. That had actually closed before the merchanting operation was set up. The Swiftbrook Paper Manufacturing Company had been running for 100 years or more, producing highly specialized, exceptionally high quality papers for private use for printers in Ireland, supplying into the top end of the paper market at the time. But time moves on, and relatively the cost of that type of product in today's market would be unacceptably high priced, and therefore could not survive in today's market. People aren't willing to pay these huge relative prices, even for a high quality item. So it would not have survived.
Okay. So it must have been very satisfying for you to know that you've set up something that still survives.
Oh yeah, I mean I had very little, purposely, I had very little to do with Swiftbrook Limited after we'd set it up, because it couldn't be seen that I, as sales manager, was also telling this independent paper merchant how to do things.
Yeah.
So we purposely pushed it aside and let it run on its own.
Okay.
But yeah, I feel what, gratified? Is that the right word? That it's still running and running successfully. But there's some very good people. And John Sexton is a great guy. I worked very, very closely with John before he moved into the paper manufacturing, into the paper merchanting.
Let's get to the end of the 1970s into the 80s. The very turbulent times.
Okay. In 1979, I'd been living in the UK for 1 year. Got a call from Henry Lund, who had been appointed the new managing director, asking me to come over for a special meeting. He introduced me to his new appointment, Brian Malloy. And Brian, at that stage, then was the managing director of the paper mill. I was asked, would I move back from the UK and still keep the responsibility of the UK, but become sales director for the paper mill? It was a promotion. I think it was a recognition of the work I was doing. And, of course, I was complimented on that and jumped at the opportunity. It also meant an increase in salary, but that wasn't the driving force. So moved back from the UK at that time. And Brian was brought in by Henry Lund to obviously look at the operation of the mill and look at the long-term viability of the mill. During that time, there were a lot of discussions and negotiations going on with the workforce and the unions to come to an understanding and a working relationship together. And Tommy had mentioned earlier about a strike which had occurred. And basically it came down to the right of management to manage.
Mm.
Now, obviously the unions of the workforce might not have seen it in the same way, but that, to try and encapsulate it, really is what it came to. And I think all parties to any discussion have to recognize what the other side is. And in the mill at the time, we had fantastically well-trained people, fantastic good operators on machines and papermaking, who wanted to do a good job, who wanted to make a success of their particular operation. But that was running in conflict with what other people wanted. People wanted either more money or more time off or less responsibility, whatever the driving force may be for different people. Equally, on the management side, the management wanted to make sure that the operation was run most efficiently, with the best order possible in its operation. And that those two sides seemed to be in conflict all the time. If you look at that in a today's situation and the way companies are running, it seems crazy that people could have looked at it so separately. The people today tend to work better together with the same objective.
So can you recall the day that Henry Lund came out and said, this mill is closing down?
Okay. We as a board of management, were called to a meeting in the Clondalkin Group headquarters. It wasn't too unusual. There had been a few other meetings of that type where different important aspects were to be discussed or decided upon. But anyway, we were called. I can't remember the exact date, but it was November 81. Okay. And we were called to a meeting. Henry Lund introduced the discussion and then made the announcement that it had been decided to close the mill. To be honest, I can't say that I was surprised. You had a feeling that something was going on, that something was heading in that direction, that there were so many pressures bearing down on paper manufacturing in Clondalkin at the time that you worried and you feared the worst.
How did Dr. Cusick take that?
Well,
news?
Amazing. After the announcement had been made and we were all sitting around the table, I suppose, with a degree of shock, the door opened and Bert Cusick walked in. And there was a vacant seat beside me and he sat down. And he leaned over and he said, "What's going on?" Mm. And I told him that it had just been announced that the paper mill was to close. And he put his head in his hands, and almost as though he was crying, I'm not sure whether he was, but he was shocked and he definitely was surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think he could see almost his whole life's work disappearing in front of him. So that probably wasn't recognized by most people that worked in the mill at the time, that here was a man who actually wasn't in control of this event. He possibly was probably blamed for this decision that was taken.
Now, so when the liquidators moved in, you were still there. You were.
Yeah, I was asked by the liquidators to stay on and work with them on the orderly closure of the mill, to sell off any stock that we had and to sell off any materials we may have had that could be sold.
Did that take long? That period, that time?
Well, it ran through from, I can't remember the exact date, but I think the liquidation started in December and ran through, from my point of view, until around about April of the following year.
Mm.
I can't remember the exact date. I probably have the documentation on it all right, but I just can't. Around about April of the following year.
Were good prices achieved for the stock that had been left?
In a forced sale situation, you're always going to get a reduction in price. You're always going to get a reduction in value. But I would say that the stock that was sold at that time was sold at probably about 70% of the value, which actually was quite good, and I would think was way better than the liquidator thought he was going to get. The whole process, I worked with them and worked with them on a professional basis, but it was still soul destroying. You were selling and closing off aspects of your life that it wasn't your decision to do that.
So there was a kind of a bad feeling.
A very, very negative, sad feeling about the whole thing. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
What did you do when it all finished?
I did some work for a number of other papermaking companies who'd asked me to represent them in the Irish market, and then was approached by a Spanish company. I spent about 8-9 months working with them. And out of the blue, then I got a call from Seamus Rowntree, who was an owner of paper merchanting and paper converting operation in Dublin. Would I be interested in talking with a consortium of Canadians who had been talking to the government and wanted to reopen the paper mill? So I said yes, because it was a very serious interest to me. And I would have loved to have seen the paper mill start up again.
And can you talk me through that? Because it's a very hazy kind of situation.
Okay.
Did you go to Canada to meet these people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Met them in Dublin, met them in Canada. In fact, I don't know how many times I was to Canada. But I would meet with them, but also with their financial backers.
Who were they?
Jim McCormick and Jack Friedman ran a relatively small paper conversion operation in Toronto. And actually, that first time that I went to Canada and saw their operation, I thought, wait a second, these guys are very small.
Yeah.
They're not even a fraction of what the paper mill operation would be. But they had an interest. They said they were extremely serious about the whole thing. And they had a very large, wealthy financial backer. And on that basis, the Irish government...
Who was that financial backer?
Wow. What was his name?
Was he Canadian?
Canadian, yeah. And, you know, it's amazing. I've met him many, many times. And he also had been very, very successful in the food franchise business. Had made a huge fortune out of that, had sold the company, a chicken restaurant company with hundreds of outlets.
Yeah.
And the buyer made a mess of the business, and he stepped in and bought it back from them at about 30% of what they had paid him. He built it back up again and sold it again.
But with the Clondalkin Mill, was that a political decision, do you think?
I think it was a very reluctant political decision to actually go that way, because huge pressure was being brought to bear by the ex-workforce on the government, both locally and nationally. And you must remember that there had been a hunger strike going on to put that pressure on. And I respect the work that the guys did on that and the commitment that was given there. That they were serious and they wanted to see papermaking for their own livelihood.
Okay. So this was the coalition government at the time. This was
correct,
Dick
yeah.
Spring.
And yeah. Dick Spring, in fact, that was the connection. Dick Spring knew Jim McCormick. Actually, their wives are next-door neighbours from Curry. Right?
Well, that's interesting.
That's a connection. And, I mean, Dick Spring, I met Dick at that time many times, and I must say I was very impressed with Dick Spring. A very serious, astute politician, denigrated by many, but for me, he was a politician doing a good job, and he was serious about it.
So it was his decision to put money into government
just his decision. I mean, he just was one person within the whole package.
He was the driving force there.
No, I'd say the driving force at that time was Charlie Hoey, who decided, look, let's pick the easy solution. Give them the money. That was the decision, because they didn't
give
want...
Give who the money now?
Give
the Canadians...
Give anybody the money.
To take it over.
To take it over and take the problem away from government.
Okay.
That was the decision.
All right. Were you there?
I wasn't involved in those decisions.
Were you...
I was approached at that time
to
come back in and work with these guys. But the government at that time, quite rightly, identified the doubt in everybody's mind that the workforce were really serious, that the unions were really serious.
Were you negotiating with these unions?
That was my job, actually, that they took me in to work with the unions through the Congress of Trade Unions to draw up an all-encompassing agreement with the unions and the workforce.
And how smoothly or how roughly did that...
That ran relatively smoothly.
Did it really?
It was high-pressure stuff at times, where different people had different objectives to achieve. But we ended up with an agreement that was committed to by all parties.
What agreement?
A full workers' agreement for papermaking in Clondalkin.
Can you, in a nutshell, tell me what that...
It meant that they agreed to rules and conditions, sanctions, intervening committees, workers' committees, union committees. It was concentrating principally on an on-site arrangement that all parties would work together. And there was a recognition, because I was aware of the difficulties in Clondalkin Paper Mill in the past, that management have the right to manage. Actually, management have a responsibility to manage and run the company. That you cannot have a situation that one person, someplace in the company, can turn around and say, no, you have to do it my way.